The deal books for Project Apex closed at midnight on a Tuesday in late November. By Wednesday morning, three investment banks knew they'd won the mandate to lead what could become the largest private company IPO in American history. By Thursday, the leaks had started. And by Friday, the valuation rumors were spinning so wildly that SpaceX's own finance team couldn't track them all. $200 billion, $250 billion. Some whispered $300. Here's what nobody's asking. What if the entire banking structure was designed backwards? What if SpaceX picked its underwriters not to maximize valuation, but to control what gets disclosed? Welcome back to Edge Capital Insights. I'm Sloan. Today we're going deep on Project Apex, SpaceX's banking structure for its anticipated IPO, and why the valuation everyone's debating might be answering the wrong question entirely. Let's establish the landscape. SpaceX is not a normal company approaching a normal IPO. This is a firm that controls 90% of global satellite launches. 90%. When was the last time you saw a company with that kind of market dominance go public? Saudi Aramco in 2019 had similar concentration in its sector, and that IPO pulled in $25.6 billion. But Aramco was selling oil. SpaceX is selling something stranger. It's selling access to a domain that until recently belonged exclusively to governments. The banking consortium reportedly includes Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and JP Morgan. On paper, this looks standard. These are the firms you'd expect on any mega deal. But look closer at the structure. According to reporting from The Information, this isn't a traditional joint bookrunner arrangement where banks compete for allocation. The mandates were carved up with unusual specificity. One bank handles institutional distribution, another focuses on international placement, a third manages the retail tranche that may or may not exist. This is control architecture, not just capital formation. SpaceX's private market valuation hit somewhere between $180 billion and $210 billion in recent secondary transactions. These weren't open market trades. These were structured deals with hand-picked counterparties at hand-picked prices. The spread alone, $30 billion, tells you how much uncertainty sits in this number. When you see a valuation band that wide, you're not looking at price discovery. You're looking at negotiated outcomes. The revenue story centers on Starlink. 4 million subscribers generating somewhere between $6 and $10 billion in annual revenue. That's another wide band. Morgan Stanley projects Starlink could hit $20 billion in annual revenue by 2027. Maybe. Their analysis assumes continued subscriber growth, minimal churn, and no meaningful competitive pressure. It also assumes that the cost structure improves by 50% over the next few years, which Elon Musk has publicly stated is achievable. He also once said Tesla would have full self-driving by 2017. Numbers projected by visionaries and numbers delivered by businesses are rarely the same thing. Let's steel man the bull case, because it's actually compelling. SpaceX has achieved something genuinely remarkable. Reusable rocket technology isn't vaporware. Falcon 9 boosters land themselves on drone ships in the middle of the ocean. This is real. The cost savings are real. A SpaceX launch runs roughly $67 million. A comparable launch on a United Launch Alliance vehicle costs closer to $400 million. That's not a marginal advantage. That's a complete restructuring of launch economics. Starlink is providing internet service to regions that had none. 4 million subscribers is not a trivial number. the terminal hardware has improved. The latency has dropped below 50 milliseconds for many users, making it genuinely competitive with terrestrial broadband in remote areas. The total addressable market for global internet connectivity runs into the hundreds of billions of dollars. If SpaceX can capture even 10% of underserved markets, the revenue scales quickly. The dual-use military angle that worries some people, that's actually a moat. The Department of Defense isn't going to let SpaceX fail. The company has become critical national infrastructure. When Russia invaded Ukraine, Starlink terminals became battlefield communication tools within weeks. That relationship with military and intelligence customers creates revenue stability that most tech companies would kill for. Government contracts aren't sexy, but they're sticky. And here's the counterintuitive part. SpaceX doesn't need Starlink to be profitable yet. It needs Starlink to be plausible. The IPO valuation isn't pricing current earnings. It's pricing the option value on a satellite internet monopoly. If you believe that satellite broadband becomes a meaningful chunk of global connectivity over the next decade, then SpaceX has a 3 to 5 year head start on every competitor. That lead time is worth an enormous premium. Now here's what they're not telling you. Amazon's Project Kuiper just got FCC approval for its full constellation. Jeff Bezos is committing $10 billion to this. $10 billion. That's not a hedge. That's not a defensive move. That's a declaration of intent to compete directly. Kuiper has partnered with United Launch Alliance, Blue Origin, and Arianespace for launch capacity. The satellites are being manufactured. The ground stations are being deployed. Kuiper doesn't need to beat Starlink. It just needs to prevent Starlink from achieving monopoly pricing power. The regulatory risk is real and underpriced. Senator Elizabeth Warren sent a letter to the SEC specifically calling out concerns about SpaceX's military contracts and regulatory compliance. Whether you agree with her politics or not, she sits on committees that matter. The company operates under ITAR restrictions, International Traffic in Arms Regulations. That means certain financial disclosures that would normally be mandatory for public companies might conflict with national security classifications. How do you price that opacity? What happens when institutional investors demand the kind of transparency that defense contractors legally cannot provide? Then there's the Elon factor. Musk's political activity has intensified. His acquisition and management of Twitter, now X, has alienated significant portions of institutional investor bases. CalPERS, the California Public Employees Retirement System, one of the largest pension funds in the country, has started asking questions about corporate governance at Musk-affiliated companies. These are not fringe activists. These are fiduciaries managing hundreds of billions in retirement assets. If major public pension funds decide SpaceX represents reputational risk, that removes a massive pool of natural IPO demand. Let's talk about a historical parallel. In 1999, Global Crossing went public. It was going to revolutionize telecommunications with undersea fiber optic cables. The IPO raised $400 million. The valuation hit $47 billion at its peak. The bull case was whoever owns the pipes owns the future of communication. The bear case was bandwidth is commoditizing and capital costs are brutal. Global Crossing filed for bankruptcy in 2002. It wasn't that the technology failed. The cables worked fine. It was that the business model assumed pricing power that never materialized. Competitors built cables too. Prices collapsed. The infrastructure was real. The returns were not. SpaceX is different in important ways. The barriers to entry in space launch are higher than undersea cables, but the core risk is similar. Infrastructure businesses with huge capital requirements only work if you can maintain pricing power. If Kuiper launches successfully and OneWeb continues to expand, Starlink becomes a good internet provider, not a monopoly internet provider. Good doesn't support a $200 billion valuation. So what does this mean for different stakeholders? If you're a retail investor excited about getting SpaceX shares, understand that you're buying at a valuation that assumes near-perfect execution. The IPO price will be set by sophisticated institutions who've done months of due diligence and negotiated access to management. You'll be buying at the price they agreed was full value. Maybe more than full value? The first day pop that people remember from tech IPOs? That's not alpha. That's underpricing. And banks are less generous with underpricing than they used to be. If you're an institutional allocations committee, you're weighing governance risk against unique asset exposure. There's no other way to get liquid exposure to commercial space launch. That scarcity has value. But Musk's involvement creates concentration risk across your portfolio if you already own Tesla. And the dual-use technology creates disclosure limitations that might violate your fiduciary standards. You need to decide if the FOMO is worth the compliance headache. If you're a SpaceX employee with equity, this is your liquidity event. Finally, but watch the lockup terms carefully. Standard IPO lockups run 6 months. For a company this strategic, with this much government involvement, don't be surprised if certain employee classes face 12-month or even 18-month restrictions. The bankers and the board will get out first. They always do. If you're Amazon or another Kuiper competitor, this IPO is a gift. It locks SpaceX's valuation in place. It creates quarterly earnings expectations. It makes the company answerable to public market investors who care about things like margin compression and competitive dynamics. Private SpaceX could spend a decade bleeding cash to build Starlink. Public SpaceX will face questions after 2 quarters of slowing subscriber growth. You want them in the public markets where scrutiny replaces secrecy. And if you're sitting in your car right now listening to this, trying to figure out what to actually do, wait. The information asymmetry on this deal is severe. SpaceX has released almost no verified financial data. The revenue numbers are estimates. The subscriber counts are unaudited. The cost improvement projections come from Musk tweets. You're being asked to price a business based on belief, not evidence. Maybe that belief is justified. Maybe Starlink really does become the backbone of global connectivity. But you don't need to decide that on IPO day. Let the price settle. Let a few quarters of public financials come out. Let the competitive dynamics with Kuiper clarify. The edges in public markets don't come from buying the hottest IPO. They come from knowing what you're buying. The banking structure matters more than people realize. Goldman, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan. These firms didn't just win a mandate, they won control over information flow. They decide which investors see which data. They set the price range, they allocate shares to accounts that will support the stock, not flip it. This is not a neutral market mechanism. This is a designed outcome. And here's the question the cold open promised to answer. Why would SpaceX structure the banking this way if they wanted maximum valuation? They wouldn't. If you want to maximize IPO proceeds, you create tension between banks, you run a bake-off, you let them compete on valuation. Instead, SpaceX handed out specific roles to specific banks with reportedly little drama. That tells you the goal isn't maximizing proceeds. The goal is controlling the process. Maybe that's because of classified information constraints, Maybe it's because Musk wants banks that won't push back on governance terms. Maybe it's because the company knows the valuation is stretched and they need underwriters who'll manage expectations, not inflate them. The $200 billion number everyone's debating, it might not even be the right frame. The question isn't what SpaceX is worth. The question is what story the banks can sell. And the story is you're buying a piece of the future of human space presence. That story doesn't trade on earnings multiples. It trades on vision. And vision is expensive. Here's my prediction. The IPO prices between $180 billion and $200 billion right in line with recent private rounds. It pops 10 to 15% on day one. Enough to generate headlines, not enough to suggest money left on the table. Within 6 months, when the first quarterly earnings show Starlink growing but not accelerating, the stock trades down to IPO price or below. And 2 years from now, we'll know whether this was the next Amazon or the next Global Crossing. The technology will work either way. But working technology and good investments aren't always the same thing. That's Edge Capital Insights for today. I'm Sloan. Stay sharp, stay skeptical.